Pete Alonso's heading back to the New York Mets on a short-term deal. Is Alex Bregman next? Yes, welcome on in to First Pitch for Thursday, February 6th, your source of news, notes, and updates on Major League Baseball. I'm your host, Lindsey Crosby. You follow me on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. He's Troy Brock, Troy B Baseball on the Twitter machine. FirstPitchPodcast.com is where you can send all your friends to get our daily MLB coverage. And Troy, I want to get to the Baltimore Orioles, right? We've been previewing the AL East. We're going to talk about them for at length. But first, the big news from last night, one of the top remaining free agents in baseball officially off the board. Pete Alonso has a two-year, $54 million deal with the New York Mets. It's being reported a little bit odd. It's being reported $30 million salary in year one with a $24 million player option for year two. It's really a $10 million signing bonus and a $20 million salary this year. And if he picks up his player option, he would get a pay raise to $24 million in salary in year two. But the signing bonus is in there because he lives in Florida. And so he can mitigate some of the New York taxes by taking the signing bonus while he is physically in Florida and then take his $20 million salary in New York. Obviously, the big thing here is along the way, turned down a seven-year, $158 million extension, would have bought out that final year of arbitration. Instead, now, 2 years, $54 million at the max. He reportedly turned down 3 years and $70 million earlier in free agency. Is this, given everything that he's kind of turned down and all of that, is this ultimately still a decent deal for Pete Alonso when you think he could get $30 million for one season and hit the market at age 31? Or is it now, if he opts out, he's on the same time frame and the same free agency class as Vlad Guerrero, so he's probably still going to end up losing in this whole situation?
Yeah, I do think that the contract he signed is probably better than the one that he should have gotten, just from, like we've talked about multiple times this offseason. He's a one-trick pony, and his one trick is hitting home runs, and he's gotten worse at that over the years. And I also agree with you that if he does opt out after 2025, he's going to be in the same place he was this year, because it seems like he hasn't learned, and he values himself much more highly than any major league team does, and he values what he brings to the table more highly than any major league team does. And it seems like to me that the Mets were always going to be the team, really the only team that he could have went to. Like, there were teams, of course, that showed interest, like the Blue Jays and
the Mariners,
and the Mariners, but the Mets are really the only team that were going to pay him that much, strictly because he spent the first 6 years of his career there. And a lot of teams that aren't the Atlanta Braves like to pay players for their loyalty over the first 6 years of their career. But no, I think that if he does opt out, he's going to be in the same exact situation he was this offseason.
Yeah. On the note of kind of being with the Mets and all of that, he is the franchise's consecutive games leader, 253 in a row. He's on track this season to be the 11th player in franchise history to appear in at least 1,000 career games. And if he produces the homer totals that he usually does, I don't think he's ever been below 34 in a full season, he will take over the Mets' all-time home run title. He is at 226. That's third. David Wright has 242. Daryl Strawberry has 252. So he needs 26 homers to be first all-time for the Mets. And then he could right then walk in free agency. Kind of just a wild thing to think about. But this does make them better for next year, right? Soto's a righty. Soto's a lefty. Alonso coming in as a righty right behind him. Now you can leave Mark Vientos at third, which means that you're not having to try to break in a Brett Beatty or a Luis Angel Acuna, be like one of those guys over at third. You can have Vientos, who made it work, you know, who looked good last year. You can have leave Vientos at third. And then if Pete opts out, you have had another season to get some of those younger AAA prospects ready to take over at third base. So I think this works out. This is the best case scenario for the Mets, I feel like, because now you get him in more of his prime and you're not paying for those decline years, right? Like you mentioned earlier, he's gotten a little bit worse in a lot of the different metrics over the last couple seasons. You can see a little bit of a decline. Some of that could just be some random variance, but a lot of it feels like as he hits his 30s and he posts, but he's not an incredibly athletic player, that he's starting to, you know, slow down just a little bit. And this is probably the best case scenario for the Mets. I do think now also this is probably a really good scenario too for Alex Bregman, because a lot of teams were talking about, the big ad could be a Pete Alonso at first or an Alex Bregman at third. And now obviously Alonso off the table. What do you think happens first? Does Bregman get signed or does Arenado get traded? Because different contract demands, different cost to acquire, but both of them are going to take either a draft pick or prospect capital to bring into your team.
Right. Yeah, it's that's a tough one because they could happen simultaneously, but it's
probably after we get done recording. That's how it always works.
Exactly. I think that just from what we've seen over the past few days, I think that Arenado gets traded first just because it does seem like the trade talks surrounding him are heating up and he's willing to go to Boston, assuming that Boston gives St. Louis what St. Louis wants to get Arenado up there in Massachusetts. I do think Arenado gets traded first, but Bregman, also over the past couple of days, we've seen that the Astros have essentially just moved on. Like they have not gone to.
They referred to him in the past tense the other day in a press conference.
Yep. And so it seems as if the Astros are planning their future without Alex Bregman in it. So his options for places to land are dwindling by the day, the longer that he stays in free agency. So I do think it's more likely Arenado signs or is traded first.
Yeah. I mean, Bregman has more suitors, right? Like you can see the Cubs reportedly have made an offer to him. You can see the Tigers trying to bring him in. The Red Sox could go after him for third. He could technically go back to Houston, although it kind of feels off the table now. But it does feel like Arenado's closer. And reportedly, you know, he turned down that trade to Houston, which would have been the best place to go from an offensive perspective for him. But reportedly, he has told the Cardinals he would waive the no trade clause to go to Boston. So it does feel like that one's probably closer to happening. And I'm really curious to see kind of how that goes. But using that to segue into the team preview, look at me as a professional here. The Baltimore Orioles are going to be competing with those Red Sox we talked about yesterday with the Yankees for the American League East. And you and I have not made a secret of kind of how disappointed we've been in this Orioles team for not being more aggressive at acquiring stars and going for quality over quantity, right? They've got some very good players. Gunnar Henderson he's on the cover of MLB The Show. He's one of the best players in baseball. Adley Rutschman's one of the best catchers in baseball, despite that second half slump he had. And you've seen them make some deals. They brought in Tyler O'Neill as a free agent. They brought in Ramon Laureano. They brought in Gary Sanchez. Like they signed three major league free agents for position players, despite having a ton of those. And then they signed Charlie Morton to a contract and Tomoyuki Sugano, both those guys for the back end of their rotation. Oh, and they brought in Andrew Kittredge to be their setup guy behind Felix Bautista. Like they signed more free agents, I think, than we were expecting, but they were never really in on any of the big name players that could make it, that were impact guys. You know, I don't think Tyler O'Neill changes anything significant. I don't think Ramon Laureano is an impact player for them. Of all these guys, Kittredge probably has the most impact, maybe not from a war perspective, but from a usage perspective. But position players first, I guess. When you look at this roster, is it fine to be, I don't know, whelmed? Like, I don't think that this is a like the one of like the best roster in the division or anything, but I'm also like, it's not bad, but I also don't see it as a top, you know, top quartile, top third roster in baseball. I'm like, okay, it's a nice mix. It's all younger guys, right? I think only Cedric Mullins and Ryan O'Hearn are even over the age of 30. But, like, it still has questions. There's talent, but there's questions. And it's fine, I guess. And like, am I wrong for thinking that this is just merely fine?
No, not at all. I mean, like you said, it's fine, but that's about it. It's not better than fine. And really, if they want to compete in the American League East, which has gotten much better this offseason.
Despite Juan Soto leaving.
Despite Juan Soto leaving, the American League East has gotten much better this offseason. And you talked about it leading into this. They've made free agency signings. They have made moves this offseason, but it feels like those moves are more just to say, hey, we did things. It's just moves to
small dollar sake.
Yeah.
Adding on the fringes and not any sort of impact, right?
Right. And like Tyler O'Neill doesn't move the needle for me. Gary Sanchez, a backup catcher who is 32 years old and has not been good since the mid-2010s, does not move the needle for me. Ramon Laureano, a fifth outfielder who is essentially only going to be a defensive replacement, does not move the needle for me. I mean, it's with Gunnar Henderson and Adley Rutschman, there were options available in free agency to add to this lineup to make it better, and instead they made moves so they can tell the fans, look, we're making moves. They didn't make moves to improve the team.
Yeah. I mean, Tyler O'Neill and Anthony Santander are different players. Like, you know, Santander took 40 homers out the door, and it's like, okay, where's the replacement for those? you know, maybe this is something like, maybe you're expecting more from Ryan O'Hearn in the DH role. Like, and there's paths, right? Like Hobie Mayo is first base, third base prospect, one of the better minor league sluggers. You can bring him up, and if he's maybe the DH or working at first base or something, because I think, you know, I could see where once he adjusts to the league, he could be a source of power for you, right? Jackson Holliday was a number one prospect in baseball going into last season. Fun fact, when the Orioles tweeted out the video to announce his call-up, the very first voice you heard on that video was mine, which I did not know was happening until I got like 10 texts in the span of like 3 minutes when it came out. Because on the prospect podcast I did, the Locked On MLB Prospects podcast, I had a segment talking about how Adley Rutschman, number one prospect in baseball, Gunnar Henderson, number one prospect in baseball, and now Jackson Holliday. It's like an unprecedented run of just dominance from this farm system. And they pulled that quote, and that's what led into the video, and it just blew my mind. But like here's quality here, right? Like there's really good players, Rutschman, Henderson. I do think, I mean, Cedric Mullins had like a 30 homer season a couple years ago. Colton Cowser is a very promising young right fielder. Heston Kerstedt, if they can ever get on the freaking field, is a very good outfielder. He can play first base. I think he's very promising. They just don't want to seem to give him play time. But you're counting on a bunch of continued growth and leaps. And I do think most of these players will take another leap. I don't think Rutschman's going to have that poor second half, although he did get a lot of plate appearances last year, and I do think that may have been part of it. Rutschman had 638 plate appearances as a catcher.
Yeah, that's insane.
I mean, it's you know, he played a lot. Mm-hmm. And it's logical to assume that some of these guys will continue to have leaps as they get older and older. It's not logical to assume that every single one will successfully have that development leap. And I just feel like they've got a couple insurance policies, right? Ramon Laureano can give you some competence if something happens. Tyler O'Neill is a useful platoon bat, but I just don't feel like they did anything that made an impact, despite the fact that there were plenty of guys that could make an impact. And this billionaire owner said that they were going, like, they were not afraid to spend money to make an impact, and it just didn't happen.
Yeah, and it's not going to surprise me in the slightest if sooner rather than later we get a breaking news report that Mike Elias has been outed as the general manager, because it seems like the owner and the general manager are not on the same page. because like you said, the owner came out earlier in the offseason and said, hey, we're willing to spend money to make this team better. And Mike Elias is like, okay, here's $50 million to Tyler O'Neill.
Yeah, there was that report that like he didn't want to go out and do it in free agency because he wanted to build it. And it's like, what? Buddy, spend the money. If you have the money, spend the money to be better.
Right. You can build up a team through your farm system to a point, but at a certain point, you have to add things from free agency or through trades to put your team over that hump, get to the next level. And that's
especially when there are really, really good players available in free agency. And I think the biggest area where that manifests, like there's position players you could have added, but I think the biggest place that manifests is the pitching staff, right? The class that we just had, whether it was guys who were traded like Garrett Crochet or free agents that were signed, whether it was a Max Fried or whoever, to come out of that free agency class, having lost Corbin Burnes and bringing in Charlie Morton and Tomoyuki Sugano, a 41-year-old and a 35-year-old who are going to be back-end guys, feels a little bit like malpractice. And I feel like it's been two full years now that we've been saying the Orioles need to be more aggressive about getting frontline starters. And they went out and got Corbin Burnes. It cost them a shortstop, a draft pick. Like, okay, wasn't a big deal. They got him. 1 year, he was good for them. But when he left in free agency, they're going to get a draft pick for him, right? He was a qualifying offer guy. They're going to get a draft pick for Santander. You were going to be getting additional picks. You could have either A, been more aggressive at bringing Burnes back, or B, been willing to sacrifice a pick to go get another qualifying offer pitcher, knowing you were getting two for those two guys signing, and they just didn't do any of it. And which free agent pitcher, like, I keep going back and forth on who they should have gotten, right? There's a bunch of righties in this rotation. Like, Max Fried, I think, would have been a good fit here. But like to come out of that with nobody but Charlie Morton and Tomoyuki Sugano, I think could be the reason you eventually see, you know, Elias fired this time by this time next year if they stumble again in 2025.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you. All offseason until he signed with the Yankees, I was banging the drum for the Orioles to get Max Fried. He would have been a perfect fit up there at Camden Yards. And now you look at the rotation and it's projected to be led by Zach Eflin, who, again, I'm high on Zach Eflin. I like Zach Eflin when he was with the Phillies, but he's not an ace. And then you've got Grayson Rodriguez, who you don't know. He could get there, but he's not there yet that we know of. And then Charlie Morton, again, I like Charlie Morton, but that he shouldn't.
I've talked to him in person. He's a wonderful person to talk to.
Yeah. It's
I don't want him as my number three on a contender.
Right. He should not. Yeah. And he should not be the biggest name that you sign all offseason at 41 years old. It's just, it doesn't make sense.
What's worse, that the best pitcher they signed was 41-year-old Charlie Morton? I'm not counting relievers here. Or that of the three plus 40 pitchers that have signed, instead of getting Verlander or Scherzer, they got Morton? Like, which one of those is worse? That Morton was the best one, or that they got Morton over getting Verlander or Scherzer?
Honestly, I'm going to say it's that Morton is the best one, because I think that Morton, his track record for staying on the field over the past few years is there a lot better than for Max Scherzer or Justin Verlander. So I don't see that changing, because Verlander's talked about it. He wants to throw gas, and so he's going to get up there and go all out every time he takes the mound. And mm-hmm. we haven't seen him be healthy or good last year or in healthy over years prior. And then Max Scherzer's missed a lot of time over the last few years. And then when he was on the field, he also hasn't been good. And while Charlie Morton isn't great, he still gives you a above 450 ERA and will more than likely qualify for the ERA title. So I do think that getting Charlie Morton out of those three was the best option, but I still think that it's not great that he's the best starting pitcher they signed and he's 41 years old.
Do we think that Kyle Gibson is a guy who ends up coming back simply because, like, he was super durable up until kind of last year? Right. He had those issues, you know, the hip, the back tightness, all that kind of stuff. Do we think that maybe they end up bringing Gibson back? Or is this something where they're a dark horse to make another trade like they did to get Burns? Like, if Dylan Cease does get moved, do we think the Orioles swoop in and make that deal to put Cease? Because, like, I feel a lot better if Cease, Rodriguez, Eflin are your 1-3 for next season. I feel really good about that, although I still don't know if you're going to be able to re-sign that guy because he is a Boris client. But like, what's more likely here, that they just bring back somebody like Gibson for the innings, or that they use some of this depth they still have and swing a trade for a guy like a Dylan Cease?
See, as the resident pessimist here on this show, I do think that it is more likely they trade for Dylan Cease than bring back Kyle Gibson, which is kind of optimistic for them, just because, like you said, in last offseason, they traded for Corbin Burns, so it does seem like they're more willing to trade for bigger-name guys than sign them in for – not that Kyle Gibson is a bigger-name guy, but to trade for a bigger-name guy than sign them in free agency. And I think that they definitely need to add Dylan Cease to this rotation if they want to compete in the American League East.
I like how you worded it. Like, you know, you're the pessimist on this show. I'm not rational when it comes to the Orioles, right? Like, like, the Orioles are the team where you might be the pessimist, but hang on, I've got a drop real quick that'll kind of explain the right way that I feel about this.
I'm a hater, man. I don't think you want to ask me that. I am a hater, so I'm going to just leave it at that.
That's probably the best way to explain me when it comes to the Orioles, simply because it's like, as a recovering prospect guy, like, they had the best farm system in baseball. They had all this prospect talent. And it was, to me, it was almost malpractice to not push some more chips in and be more aggressive at supplementing around that talent. And now you're at the point, Adley Rutschman is in arbitration, okay? Gunnar Henderson's going to be in there after the season. You've got guys who are getting expensive who are about to leave. You just lost Santander. Cedric Mullins is on the final year. You know, Ryan Hearn, I think, is going to be close to free agency soon. They're going to start losing more of these veterans, and they just haven't been aggressive enough at getting the depth to go in there. I did kind of forget about Kyle Bradish and Tyler Wells being hurt. I don't think you see Bradish back this year. He had Tommy John in June of last year. Conventional Tommy John, that's a 12 to 18 month thing. I don't think you see him in 25. Tyler Wells had an internal brace in June. So it's possible they get him back a little bit. It's like a deadline ad, I guess. But I still think they need to do more. And the bullpen, I don't know. I kind of like the bullpen. I think the top five of the bullpen, not bad. Felix Bautista coming back from injury, provided that he's the same guy that he was, which is not a given, but Bautista, ton of velo, filthy looking dude. They signed Andrew Kittredge. They got Sir Anthony Dominguez, who you have feelings on, but Yennier Cano. I don't even mind Gregory Soto. Like, I feel like the bullpen's not bad. It's just a question of one, how guys are going to rebound from injury, and can they do enough if they end up having to get overworked because the rotation can't carry their own weight?
Yeah, for sure. I agree. I agree. The bullpen's not bad. Honestly, I like the bullpen more than I like the starting rotation, especially if, you know, Felix Bautista can come back from injury well. I like Sir Anthony Dominguez. I didn't like that the Phillies traded him, but especially for Austin Hayes and how that trade turned out. At the time, I didn't like it. And then after the fact, I also didn't
like
it.
I still don't like it.
Yeah. But it's the bullpen's solid. And it's kind of like I said yesterday, teams seem to be focusing on a few aspects and letting one aspect fall behind. And for the Baltimore Orioles, it's like their offense and their bullpen are the aspects that they're focusing on, and they're letting the starting rotation fall behind. And
yeah, now
go ahead.
Sorry, they do have some young guys that got a little taste from last year. They acquired Trevor Rogers via trade, but like Chase McDermott made a start. Cade Povich, they used. I mean, he pitched like 80 innings. They added, you know, they have Brandon Young. They've got some prospects like a Trace Bright and things like that. They do have some young pitchers who if one of them takes a step up and becomes an everyday starter, you feel a little bit better, but it's still the top end of the rotation is your questions. The top end of the rotation is still the issue. I do think the depth is there, which is something you didn't have going into even last year. You didn't really have the depth, but yeah, I agree that like the bullpen is definitely the strength of the pitching staff and not the top of the rotation. So that's kind of, I guess, my concern with that. And I just feel like you have so many outfielders that you can package an outfielder in a trade to get another top end starter.
Yeah, for sure. Right. And you have to compare these things with the rest of the division because your starting pitchers are going to be the ones that are facing these batters more often than the bullpen. So when you're looking at Zach Eflin going to face Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Aaron Judge, Giancarlo Stanton, Cody Bellinger, Bo Bichette, assuming he bounces back after his injury filled last year. Now they've got to face Anthony Santander, Rafael Devers, Trevor Story, who might be healthy this year, maybe Tristan Casas, unless he gets traded, potentially Nolan Arenado. Like it's, if you're going to pick between your starting pitching and your bullpen to be a strength, in my opinion, I think they made the wrong choice of the bullpen being the stronger of the two, which again, I like that their bullpen is good. And if they do have a lead going into a game late, then they've got a pretty good chance of sealing the deal, but it's going to be hard to, they're going to have to score a lot of runs with who their starting pitcher is.
Yeah. Oh, and then also there's the whole thing of if you compare like rotation to rotation, right? Like Garrett Cole versus, let's say, Grayson Rodriguez. If you make him the one, Garrett Cole, Max Fried over Zach Eflin, Max Fried, Carlos Rodon over Charlie Morton, Carlos Rodon, like Luis Gill over Dean Kramer, Luis Gill, you know, it's every single position. You're like, yeah, I'd rather have the Yankees. Even if you go to Boston, like I'd rather have Garrett Crochet than Grayson Rodriguez. If it's a, not maybe not from a contract or control perspective, but like if I have to win a game, I'd rather have Crochet than Grayson Rodriguez. And it's just, that's the situation you're in, is it's maybe the third or fourth best rotation in the division. Like Toronto's rotation's not terrible. Kevin Gausman's been very good in his career. It's a lot of bounce back candidates, but Jose Berrios, Chris Bassett, Bowden Francis looked amazing at times last year. Max Scherzer, like you'd probably rather have that group, that veteran group, than this, whatever this rotation mix is here in Baltimore. It's like, okay, what about Tampa Bay's rotation? It's like, okay, well, they're going to be led by Shane McClanahan. I'd rather have Shane McClanahan than Grayson Rodriguez. I'd rather have Taj Bradley than Zach Eflin, like Ryan Pepiot versus Charlie Morton. Like this might be the fifth worst rotation in the American League East. And that's just doing a disservice to all of these young pitchers or these young position players that they have that are so good. Like, I don't think it matters how good Rutschman and Henderson are if this is the worst rotation in the division. And that shouldn't be the case at this point in the rebuild.
Yeah, I definitely don't think you're off base by saying this is the worst rotation in the division, because it on paper, it definitely looks to be that way, because it's just not a good rotation. But like I said, they're putting a lot of pressure on their young guys and their offense to score runs. Like Gunnar Henderson's 23 and a half. Jackson Holliday's 21. Adley Rutschman is 27. Colton Cowser's about to be 25. Jordan Westberg's 26. And you're putting a lot of Heston Kerstad, if he, like you said, if he gets on the freaking field, then he's Kirsten, 26. Kirsten. I'm sorry.
That was the hardest one for me to get right. It's Heston Kerstad. Yeah, I had to.
Okay.
He's Bubba. Even Grayson Rodriguez is 25 years old, and you're asking him to take a leap in his third year in the majors. Like, this is the time when guys do that. Like, that's the big caveat here, is this is the time in guys' careers when they take those leaps, right? In your mid-20s or so. But it just feels like you need a lot of things to go right and not a lot to go wrong for things to work out for the Orioles. They're kind of banking on hope. And I know rebellions are built on hope. World Series champions aren't always built on hope. So we'll see what happens.
I don't know, man. The Dodgers World Series championship was built on hope.
It was built on hope and like an incredibly, three MVPs in the lineup and bullpen with like five closers in it. Final thoughts on the Orioles before we get out of here.
I think they're going to, as things stand right now, I think they're going to finish fourth in the division.
Fourth?
Yep.
So who are they beating? They beating the Rays or they beating
the Rays?
They're beating the Rays. They're fourth. And folks, y'all heard it here. I was going to say third. I do have questions about Boston a little bit still, I think. But I would say the Orioles are third. But, you know, there you go. Third or fourth. We don't have the Orioles winning the division. So let's put it that way. Folks, if you're listening on audio, do us a favor. Leave us a five-star review. If you're on YouTube, subscribe to the channel. Hit the notification bell so you know when we drop the next episode. And until next time, this has been First Pitch.